Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 162. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Slovenia. If you hear the word Slovenia and don't automatically think natural beauty, you need to pay attention today on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one is a little bit of a surprise to me, but if you are of a certain size that you require two airline seats to fit, and you're traveling in Canada, you'll only have to pay for one seat. The Canadian Supreme Court ruled Thursday that people who are, quote, functionally disabled by obesity deserve to have two seats for one fare. This was something that had been appealed to them, and the airlines lost on appeal. If you're going to Washington, D.C., some good news for you. The Smithsonian's National Museum of American History reopened last week after an $85 million facelift, so you may want to check out that new and improved museum. Penthouse is seeking to buy a Las Vegas casino, and the quote was, "Chief executive of Penthouse says the company is looking to buy a casino on the Las Vegas Strip and generate business by tying it to the adult magazine and website empire." Penthouse CEO Mark Bell told the Las Vegas Review-Journal for a report published Sunday, "The best time to buy is in a down economy." Quote, "We're looking to make a presence, take something and clean it up and fix it up and give it a new image," he said. "We think it will be a tremendous draw." I have to wonder that if having your hotel taken over and cleaned up by Penthouse improves the image, you might be in some place pretty sleazy. For more details on all of these stories, as well as some others that I didn't mention, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Shel Holtz from For Immediate Release podcast, among other things, who's come to talk to us about Slovenia. Shel, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Good to be here.
And I listened to Shell's podcast, and so this sounds very familiar hearing your voice. Why Slovenia? What led you to Slovenia?
Work, as a matter of fact. I was invited out there on two trips in 2001 for some speaking engagements and some consulting. The first trip happened to come pretty close to my wedding anniversary, and also was invited to do some work in Denmark right afterwards, which would have been on our anniversary. So I had brought my wife along and we made a vacation of it. We were actually in Denmark on September 11th, 2001, which was different experience than most people here in the country had. But yeah, it was strictly work.
And just before we go into some of the details, what was your overall impression of Slovenia?
I could retire to this country. I loved it. It was just a fabulous place, which I have to tell you, came as a surprise. When I first told my wife we were going to Slovenia, she had in her mind this sort of Afghanistan type of terrain, you know, rocky.
Oh, really? Wow.
And it was funny. I read an article about Slovenia after we got back in the travel section of one of the newspapers that called it Europe's Hidden Jewel and made the point that most people, if you ask them to tell you where Slovenia was, couldn't do it, but just a stunning place.
My impression is woods and hills and mountains.
Not so many mountains until you get over around the Austrian border, but definitely forests and hills and vineyards. And I don't think there's a bad part of the country. Just stunning. Lakes, caverns.
And what was your itinerary in Slovenia? I mean, now we're talking about a large country, obviously, but...
No, very small. We spent most of our time in Ljubljana, which is the capital. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was working. And we were hosted by some of the leaders of the International Association of Business Communicators chapter in Ljubljana. But one of our hosts, actually her name was Edina, and she was the office manager for, I believe, IABC or one of the communication associations in town, took us up to Lake Bled, which is a resort mm-hmm. lake. We were also driven out into the countryside a couple of times for lunches and sightseeing. And the itinerary was primarily work, and we got to do a little sightseeing in between.
Of the sightseeing part, what was the highlight for you?
Man, it's hard to say. There were three things that really stand out. One of these was Lake Bled itself. This is up in the northern part of the country. It has this island in the middle of the lake, and on the island is this church, cathedral. I think it's about, I'm trying to remember how old this thing is. I think it's 15th century. And people still have weddings out there, and there's some sort of myth about ringing the church bell, which anybody can do. But you're rowed out there on these unique rowboats that will take you out onto this island. And also on the shore, there's a resort with an outdoor cafe where they serve these cakes that they're famous for. I actually was able to look these up on the web, and everybody talks about these cakes. The person who took us up to the lake was just raving about, this is the main reason I think she wanted to go, was because she loved these things and didn't get to eat them all that often. So the lake was one of the highlights.
Do I have the right church? Is this the church where there's a tradition also that good luck for the bride and groom if the groom carries the bride all the way up to the church from the shoreline?
I believe that's the same place.
Okay.
The church is called the Church of the Assumption of Mary. It just looks as old as it sounds. And the cake is called Kremsnita. I made some notes. Kremsnita, Kremsnita. Bled was one of the highlights. We spent a full day out there. Then we went over to Postojna Cave. I think that's pronounced correctly. It's Postojna. And you have to take a train for about half a mile into the cave before you get out and do any walking. This place is massive.
Wow.
There's 20 kilometers of galleries and chambers and passages, and you're in a big group. But one of these chambers is so large that their symphony orchestra used to play with an audience watching inside this chamber because the acoustics were so spectacular. They've got the stalactites and the ones that hang from the ceiling and the one that comes up from the bottom, and it's just stunning. The country apparently is riddled with these caverns, but this is the big one and the one that the tourists see. And not too far from there is Predjama Castle. This is, I guess, about 700 years old, and it actually has dungeons that you can tour. It was a robber baron who had this built or captured it, or I'm not quite sure how he came into possession of it, but his name was Erasmus of Predjama. And it was really just an old medieval castle. And I remember we saw, I think it was a tomb or a crypt, and the name on it happened to be the name of our rabbi, which is I think it's a German name, Graetz, G-R-A-E-T-Z. We had to take a picture of it and show it to him. It's interesting because he's from Argentina, but apparently his family emigrated from Europe. So, but those were the three highlights for me. That speaks nothing of the food and the vineyards and the wines, but those were the three places that we went that really captured my imagination.
Well, let us speak then of the vineyards and the wine. And
we saw a couple of vineyards as we were driving around and had lunch at one. Mm-hmm. They had a villa at the top of the hill with a restaurant that had an outdoor cafe. It's funny, it's 7 years ago, and I remember we had gnocchi, which I usually don't care for, but made completely different there, very, very small, but overlooking the vineyards. And the wines are amazing. And I asked one of our hosts why we don't see more Slovenian wines in the U.S., considering how amazingly good they are. And they just don't have the production for too much export. There's some that get into New York. There's a Slovenian importer living in New York who gets some, but they don't get much beyond a few restaurants in New York. So it's just a small country with small vineyards, so they just don't have that kind of production. But man, I'd go back just to drink some of those wines.
It's interesting when you talk about having gnocchi, and I don't know why that takes me by surprise, considering that it is a neighboring country to Italy. It's really not that far away, but it seems so culturally different.
Yeah, well, it is. It borders Italy. In fact, the second time I went, I was speaking at a conference in Portorose, which is a seaside part of the country. Mm-hmm. They don't have but a few kilometers
of ocean.
We were standing out on a jetty, and the fellow I was with said, if you look left, you see over there? And he pointed, and I said, yeah. He said, well, that's Croatia. And then he turned and pointed right, and he said, you see that over there? That's Trieste in Italy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's very close, and a lot of the food migrates over. But there's also, you get a lot of things like venison and some game type meats and some interesting desserts and vegetable concoctions that I don't remember because I wasn't wild about them. But what's really interesting, though, is that they have a fairly new tradition there called slow food. There's also a slow food movement in the U.S., which is a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was at a concert in San Francisco about 2 months ago that was the slow food fundraiser, but entirely different. That one is based on organics and naturals. The whole idea here is that in Slovenia is that it's a backlash to fast food.
Right.
It's usually on Sundays where families get together and they have these meals that last 4 or 5 hours with 8 or 9 or 10 courses and a different wine to complement each course. But when you're a guest, every meal they want to take you to is a slow food meal. So every evening we were out for another one of these 3 or 4 hour marathon dinners. I remember, the food was all, well, mostly great. I'm sure if you're raised with some of this stuff, you get a little more accustomed to it. Some of it was pretty bizarre tasting to me, but
bizarre taste in what way? I mean, not spicy, just, I would think, or anything
that. I love spicy foods. No, right. These were like pickled things that you would never think would be pickled and that sort of thing.
Okay.
But by and large, it was very good. But I remember we were out to this one dinner. It was after the speaking engagement I had at the IABC chapter. My wife and I are sitting there, and they're just bringing course after course. And after the main course, which was a fillet of some kind, my wife leans over and whispers, "Thank God it's going to be dessert, and then we'll finally be able to leave." And they take the plate away from the fillet and bring out venison.
So, oh, shit.
You know, and I think there were 3 courses of dessert. It was all great. But the last night we were there, I get a call in the hotel room saying they're taking us to the finest seafood restaurant in all of Ljubljana. And I tell my wife, and she says, "Oh, dear God, no." We were stuffed. But apparently, on Sundays, when the families do this, they have the highest accident rates in the country because people are drinking all the wine and eating all the food and then driving home on Sunday evening.
Oh, funny.
Not paying quite as much attention to the roads as they are the rest of the week.
And where did you stay? Anything you would recommend in terms of some? You stayed in Ljubljana, if you said, at least the first time.
The first time we were in Ljubljana, and I can't remember the name of the hotel. Everybody speaks English. I mean, right down to the chambermaids and the hotel staff. As my friend Jasna was telling me, whom I met over there but have seen several times since then, what happens is the country is so small, they don't have a lot of their own native entertainment.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So they consume a lot of American movies, a lot of American music and TV. Most of it isn't subtitled. The stuff that is what they use from the time they're very young to learn English. So,
interesting. Yeah,
just because the entertainment they consume is so much of it is American, they all learn to speak English just from watching the TV shows and the movies and hearing the songs.
Hmm. I've definitely run into that in other smaller countries, too, with the same sort of thing where you are listening to the radio. For instance, I remember I think it was in Holland one time or Netherlands, and it was all like we were listening to the radio here. I mean, the station we were hearing at least was all American pop music or something like that.
Right.
Not as many Slovenian artists then.
Right. There is a river that runs through Ljubljana, and there are boats that you can take these little cruises. And in fact, the talk I gave was on one of these boats. It was large enough to hold all of the members of the IABC chapter for a meal. Well, not a meal, but hors d'oeuvres. And for me to stand up at a microphone and give a talk.
It's a dirty, thankless job, but
somebody's
got to
do it. That's right.
Anything that was a big surprise, other than the fact that it wasn't like Afghanistan for your wife?
Yeah, or for me either.
Or for you either.
Just how friendly everybody was. And it's not to say that people aren't friendly other places, but I mean, just incredibly warm and welcoming. As I mentioned, because I mentioned that the tomb or crypt that we saw had the name of my rabbi on it, you know, I'm Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that when my wife and I came into the country, we increased the Jewish population there by about 8%.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, all of the Jews left during World War II. Nobody came back. So, like, 0% Jewish in the population there, primarily Catholic in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of these little churches that the towns are centered around as you're driving, oh, say, toward Lake Bled. You pass these little towns where everything is sort of spreads out from where the church is. Very picturesque. But yeah, we were surprised to find out that there were like 11 Jews in the country. So
interesting. Now, with the neighboring country being Croatia and Herzegovina and such, is there more of a Muslim population?
Very little. In fact, I looked it up before we did the interview, and it's heavily dominated by Catholic and then other Christian religions.
Mm-hmm. Denominations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also bordered by Hungary on one side and the Adriatic to the southwest.
Right.
where that little bit of coastline is.
Right. Now, did you do any preparation, like reading the guidebooks, to know what the guidebooks recommended that you thought was a little bit of a waste of time or what they left out?
Well, we bought a couple of guidebooks and we took them over there, but we were never really given an opportunity to do much on our own. So everywhere we went, our hosts were in charge. But that was great because you get the perspective of somebody who lives there rather than the tourists.
Sure, sure.
And we ate at a lot of restaurants that were, oh, there was one that was in a, looked like an industrial park. It wasn't any place that you would expect to find in a guidebook, but
interesting.
A little hole in the wall, but spectacular food that they knew to take us there.
And you may have already mentioned, but what's the best day you had in Slovenia?
Had to be the day at Lake Bled. Just, okay. It was really terrific. Now, there's another lake that we went to just after that. It was about maybe an hour ride from Lake Bled. And I can't remember what it was called, but it was right at the Austrian Alps, which we got to see. We took the train from Ljubljana to Copenhagen through Munich. And so we got to take the train up through the Alps, which was amazing scenery. I mean, just glued to the window until light faded. But this place was nice, too, and nice town nearby where we had, again, more Italian food.
It seems like the Italian food has caught on, not just obviously here in the U.S., but lots of different places I go in Europe now. You can get good Italian food, so sometimes supplanting some of the local cuisine, I think.
Right, and of course, when you do Italian food outside the U.S., they don't drown it in marinara sauce. It's
like right, little... sure. You'd be closer to northern Italy, for one thing, so a little different cuisine there.
Sure.
Anything you wish you had known before you went?
That's an excellent question. I can't think of anything. One interesting thing, when I was there, one of the things I was doing was meeting with government group communicators who were at the time mounting the campaign to build support for Slovenia's entry into the European Union. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting, meeting with these folks and reviewing the different ways they could use tools on the web to build that support. I didn't know I was going to be doing that. I knew I was going to be meeting with some people, but I think they came up with the opportunity to meet with these folks last minute. So I certainly wish I had learned more about the country's effort to become part of the EU. Mm-hmm. Probably would have been of more use to them in that consultative role, but that would have been very helpful.
That's an interesting point, because I don't know that a lot of times I think we would probably have a little more interesting conversations when we're traveling if we were just a little more up to date on the political, what was going on in country. And we often don't get that in our media, obviously.
Right.
I'll bet there aren't a lot of Slovenian stories that make it into the U.S. outside the travel section. So.
Yeah, definitely not. It is a democracy. This is the westernmost part of what used to be the Yugoslav Republic. And Tito, actually, there's this estate on, I think it was the shore of Lake Bled, where Tito spent his summers. But there's a lot of Western influence there. So one of the things that they have, an auto manufacturing plant, and a lot of prosperity coming into Slovenia since the breakup of the Soviet Union. They're really thriving. There's a pharmaceutical manufacturing plant. And Ljubljana, I was talking to a lot of professionals, graphic designers and people like that. Tons of work for them. For the first time, people are buying like expensive cars, big cars, rather than the little ones that you used to see in the Soviet countries. But there's still a lot of remnants of the fact that this was part of the communist bloc at one time. For example, the architecture, when I was out in Podoros, one of the hotels had this, you know, real Soviet concrete block kind of architecture to it, which is quite a striking contrast to the architecture that existed, you know, 100, 200, 300 years ago that sort of intersperses all the stuff that was built by the Tito regime.
You talked about them getting a heavy diet of American media, and so I think there are probably a lot of things that are the same. What was the most striking difference you ran into in Slovenia?
Difference between
here and
their
there.
Culture?
Yeah. I would think they'd be shrinking whatever they are at this point.
Yeah, they really are. It's a very westernized country. I never felt out of place. I never felt like I was in an alien culture at all. I think the fact that everybody spoke English probably contributed to that. Now, when you're in Ljubljana and you realize this is the capital city and it's the largest city and it's only about a quarter million people, I think 276,000 people, that's a little odd for me, but I've always lived in places like Los Angeles and San Francisco. So I used to... much larger throngs of people. So the fact that you never felt like you were in a crowded place was different.
The most memorable person you met?
Oh, boy. I met a lot of great people there. The most memorable person I met, actually, I had met him before. He's the one who ended up inviting me out. His name is Brane Gruben, and he owns a couple of companies out there, a communications organization and a design firm and a printer, an entrepreneur in a country that didn't really inspire entrepreneurship.
You know, previously, right.
But a real wheeler and dealer, but a very nice guy, very gregarious, knew everybody. Wherever we went, he was out there shaking hands with people he knew. It was just interesting watching him operate, but he's a member of my professional association. I've actually met him at international conferences in the U.S. before, but just a fascinating guy, a real success story.
Okay. Anything else we should know before we go to Slovenia?
Trying to think. Seven, 8 years ago, it all starts to fade. So we covered the food, the wine, the lake, the cake. I had to mention that Kremsnita was as good as we had been promised it would be. Cavern. No, I think that's everything that I could remember from back then.
Okay. If you had to summarize the country in three words, what three words would you use?
Friendly, green, and by green I mean foresty, and as opposed to environmental, the current political use of the word, and tasty.
Shell, thanks so much for coming onto the show and telling us a little bit about your trip to Slovenia.
My pleasure.
And we'll put a link in the show notes to FIR for immediate release, which is your normal show, which is on PR. That's a little more narrow than I'd want to describe it. How would you describe the show?
Well, it addresses the intersection of technology, online technology, business and organizational communication in PR. It's every Monday and Thursday.
Well, thanks so much.
And I should note that I have a co-host. It's not just me.
Oh, sorry. Yes, we should mention Neville also.
My colleague Neville Hobson in the UK. So,
thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
I have one internet resource for you today, and that's one that I got from a friend who is studying to be a travel agent, and it is called professionaltravelguide.com, and she recommended it as a good place to get an overview about different countries you're going to. I looked up Slovenia on professionaltravelguide.com and got a little brief overview on it. It's a small country, so there's a small entry for it. It says, for instance, take a little bit of Bavaria, a sliver of Mediterranean Riviera, a stretch of the Danube, a touch of Venice, and a slice of the Balkans, and you have Slovenia, one of Europe's best-kept secrets. And then it goes on to talk about the history, the planning, safety, dining, what to see and do, etc. So check that out, professionaltravelguide.com. I got a comment on amateurtraveler.com from Michelle. And Michelle said about the Transylvania show, great show, Chris. The interviewer did a great job of finally explaining the name Dracula. Thank you. And he made the sights sound so beautiful. The ATM escort story was cute. I could just see him flanked by loud, sirened police cars to the ATM. Laugh out loud. Bet everyone stopped what they were doing to see what all the fuss was about. Please do more shows about Romania in general and do more on Ireland and Scotland, too. Please keep up the great shows. They are as good as being there. Well, maybe not as good as being there, but I'm glad you appreciate them, Michelle. I have done a show recently on Ireland. I am looking to do a show on Scotland, but I have been having a little trouble lining up the guest. Christina also left a comment recently on amateurtraveler.com on episode 49, which is the show on Antarctica, and requested a transcript. And Christina, I would love to provide transcripts for all the shows. Unfortunately, to transcribe shows costs somewhere in the order of 75 cents to $1.50 per minute of transcription, or I could do it myself, and I just don't have the time to do that. If someone wants to volunteer to do transcriptions, I would love it. It would help me get more visitors. I would love to get more visitors to check out the show, but I'm afraid that doesn't look like something that's going to happen real soon. With that, I should probably end this show. It's my 27th wedding anniversary, and I should stop podcasting if I want to live to 28 wedding anniversaries. If you want to contact me, feel free to leave a comment, as Michelle and Christina did, at amateurtraveler.com, or send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. My birthday is coming up in a couple weeks. If you want to get me something, tell your friends about the Amateur Traveler, or leave a review on iTunes or someplace else where podcasts are reviewed. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should